This particular interview has gotten under my skin, and as we are nearing Passover, it has meant a lot to me on a personal and professional level. My father is an author, political activist, and a former professor of sociology at some of the greatest universities in the U.S. My mother was a social worker who got herself out of poverty in the Bronx to become quite an endowed woman with agency, and also interviewed people with my dad like Che Guevara and Ben Gurion as a journalist. So yes, it was an interesting household to grow up in, and I think I relate particularly on a deep level to what Eitan says. So when I met with Eitan, he was in Tel Aviv, I was in LA, we sat across from one another on Zoom. I found a kindred spirit, somebody who cares about the truth, somebody who cares about pride, someone who cares about peace, someone who cares about rocking the boat, standing up for the truth, speaking out for those who can't, at a time where we all need to stand up and speak out.
What will they think if I rock the boat? Rock the boat. I think that's okay. As long as you're respectful about it, rock the fucking boat.
Welcome to Passion to Power with your host, Michelle Zeitlin. She's a creative producer who quote-unquote wears many hats. She's also a talent and literary manager and founded the company Morzat Productions and Management. She develops people and projects across all media. Her guests encompass the gamut, from artists to authors, actors to activists. Please welcome Michelle Zeitlin, Passion to Power.
Eitan Chitayat, I'm a creative. I'm a writer. I've always been creatively inclined ever since I was a young boy. My career started in the States when I went to Emerson College and I did a master's degree in marketing. And in the last semester of my degree, I did one course of creative advertising. And I was like, what's this? And I got the bug. And when everyone was out getting jobs, I actually sat in the computer lab and I put together a portfolio, which back in the day was coming up with an idea with kind of like spec work and marrying lines with visuals and then taking that portfolio and shopping it around to get a job. And I actually managed to land a job at one of the most prestigious accounts at the time, which was the Volkswagen account. And that was at Arnold Worldwide in Boston. I was there for around 4 years. And then I went to New York City, where I was a senior creative at Ogilvy & Mather, working on American Express and DHL and SAP and DuPont and accounts like that. And then I went to BBDO in New York, another big agency, where I was a creative director on digital at Target and AT&T. Then I decided to come back home. I was the executive creative director of TBWA, which is the agency that has the Apple account in the States. And I was there for a year. It wasn't my scene. I found that it was very difficult to work all of a sudden after international branding and advertising experience to all of a sudden come to Israel. And culturally, it was very difficult for me to speak to the Israeli demographic. So I just decided to open up my own shop and I started Natty Branding Agency. And since starting that around 14 years ago, we've worked directly with Apple in Cupertino, California. We launched Gmail in Africa. We've worked on YouTube Space Lab and Facebook in London. And we've also worked with an extraordinary amount of companies, both small, medium, corporate, in pretty much every industry that you can imagine. And that's what I do now. And I love doing it. I love branding.
I have found that there's a real difference working directly with a brand versus working through the agency with a brand. And on my side, it's been as either a director choreographer or as a talent and literary manager. Those are my worlds. So I'm curious, having opened your own shop, what are the differences? How do you communicate and who are you communicating with? And how do you plug and pitch your ideas and how are they received differently than working through a major agency?
When I was on the agency side, we'd work directly with clients. And then, of course, once in a while, when we were short-staffed or we needed a certain specialty, we'd bring creatives in. And when I started my own agency, I was networking. So at the beginning, it was someone needed copywriting and I would do a copywriting project. But soon they needed art to go with it. So I bring an art director on board and then suddenly they wanted strategy. So it slowly evolved. But for the first few years, I was doing a lot of advertising and branding. And then slowly I moved away from advertising for two reasons. One is it's very fast paced and to a certain stage where I wasn't enjoying it anymore because I like the marathon. I like diving in deep, getting to know the company, getting to know their values, getting to know their personality, getting to know everything it is about them and delivering the foundation for what it is that they are and how it is that they should express themselves. And in advertising, it was very just like everything's needed yesterday. You have that in branding as well, but you have a process which you control. And in advertising, I didn't really have that process. And the second thing was that with advertising, it felt like many times I wasn't able to tell the truth. Like it felt like I was making things up, not bad things, but like, you need to come up with something creative. And sometimes it was about your creativity and not the product, not the company, not the organization. And in branding, it has to be about the product. It has to be about the organization. So I kind of like moved away from advertising. And when it comes to your question about agencies, in the first few years of Natty, agencies, because I have a pretty, knock on wood, very grateful for this, but I have a pretty good reputation creatively, internationally. So agencies would come to us and they would basically hire us to do the agency work very much like I did when I was at agencies. And I felt again that I didn't have control. And so I started saying no. I started saying no to the big agencies, even though it was very lucrative. And I started looking for my own clients and working directly with clients. And it's very, very rare that we work with other agencies unless it's a partnership, unless we know them, because you have to know the chemistry has to be right. So we work directly with our clients now. So we work directly with Apple, we worked directly with Google and Facebook and all the companies that we work with. It's direct.
There's something about the truth in advertising. Is there any truth in advertising? I mean, basically, marketing, selling is to get people to buy. So when you talk about the truth, tell me what that means.
Well, I believe that there is a truth. I know that some people say that there are many truths, and there are, but I believe that when it comes to branding, the job of a branding agency is to deliver what the said organization should say about itself. Like, what is it that we are trying to express about what it is that we do? And then the how. And if you dig deep enough, if there is a good product, if there is a good service, or they're offering something to the public or their own audience that is a good product, then you don't just talk about the product. You need to talk to them about why it is they do what they do. How is it that they are truly different? How is it that they are really going to revolutionize the world with this, whatever it is that they're doing? What type of people are they truly looking to hire? What kind of people do they say no to? What makes them get up every day in the morning? What is the vision of the founder? These things are very, very true. And when we go through the vetting process, when clients come to us, and again, we're quite fortunate in that clients come to us, we vet them. And I try and suss out if this is a client that has something good and that their heart is in the right place. I mean, everyone wants to make money. We all want to succeed. But I think that the craft of branding is to narrow the gap between the reality of who they are, the company, and how it is that they are perceived. So if they have a great product, but shit leadership, and the person's an asshole, then I won't work with them just because I've been there, I've done that, no thank you. If they have it good on both sides, that's wonderful. And sometimes they have a product like especially in Startup Nation and Startup Land, that the product is not there yet, but the vision for where the product needs to go is there, and their heart is in the right place, their values are in the right place, then you can already see that that gap can kind of like, you can narrow that gap. So to me, the truth is really getting to know what it is that they're all about at a human level, at a leadership level, and also with what it is that they actually offer. And those are the clients that we go for. I mean, we say no to a lot of clients because being a small shop, and it's a small shop and I don't want it to grow because I like to stay close to the work. I get to choose if they want to work with us, then the beauty of being small is I don't have to take on that much work, and I get to decide if what they're doing aligns with what I'm doing at the human level, at the values level, at the level of the standard that they're offering of whatever it is that they're offering. So I don't know if that answers your question about truth, but I believe in that, and it drives me like in all of my life, and it's gotten me in trouble a lot of times, but I'm the guy that holds up the mirror. And yes, it can get you in trouble on a personal level too. It's like, what do you think I should do? So the non-confrontational way is just, yeah, do what you feel, or everything is good. And I'm like, nah. You have to do this, which is, some people don't want to hear it, but that's me.
How many accounts are you able to handle at a time?
It depends on the type of project. I mean, so we're always working on an array of client work. Sometimes it's the whole shebang. It's the brand strategy, the story, the name, it's the logo, it's the visual identity and the website, and it's a 9-month project, a year-long project, a 2-year project. Sometimes clients come to us that we've worked with before and where we delivered their brand, and they have an annual report, so it's a one-off, or they have a corporate presentation. And sometimes clients come to us with an established brand, with a brand book, with a story, and they say, hey, we need a website, and we'll do it. And then many times, a lot of times, potential clients come to us and they say, we haven't got anything, but we need XYZ. And in those cases, we typically say no. So the answer to your question is anywhere between 6 to 12, maybe 14 projects at a time. And some of them can be a mix of like maybe 3 major branding projects with 8 smaller things. Or it could be 1 major branding project with 10 smaller things. It really depends.
And do you grow your team based on each project? Do you bring on team members?
No. When I built the agency, I built a remote agency. Coming from the States to Israel, there's incredible talent here in Israel, but culturally it was difficult for me because there's a different way of working. And my school was working with some of the top creatives and some of the top agencies in the world, where there's a certain approach, there's a certain process, there's a certain mindset. And when I couldn't find that in Israel, I decided to create a remote agency way before COVID. I mean, that's how I built the agency. And the talent that is with me today, still to this day, everyone is international and senior. And I don't want to grow the agency because, I mean, it's interesting if we get to talking about the other stuff that I do, which is the advocacy work that I do. I like to be close to the work. And the bigger you are, the further away you get from it. And the only reason to do it really is maybe your name and success. But I'd like to think that my name is, I have integrity and I'm able to put food on the table for the family. And I don't want to grow. Money doesn't drive me. I mean, I like money and we're a little bit more expensive than a lot of agencies here in Israel, certainly. But it's about the work. So the bigger you get, I think the harder it is to maintain that standard. So I'm very happy with the way it is. I don't want to be Pentagram or Wolf Olins. I'm very happy to be small, natty.
What does natty mean? You're natty?
Meaning flip it around, and it's my name.
I love it.
Nothing crazy.
Is there a different lens through which you would look, or would you give yourself some advice or tweak the story? How would you speak to yourself if you wanted to give some creative advice to your younger self?
Now, I've got 2 young kids. One of them's almost 9 and one of them's 11. And when I was growing up, and it's connected to our parents' generation, I was always trying to please my parents based on what they thought was good for me. but not based on what I thought was good for me. And I was a very creative kid. And actually, I see it with my two children who are very creative, and my younger one especially. He reminds me of me in many ways when I was a kid. And what I'd like to do for him is I'd like to push him into the area that he's interested in and that he feels passionate towards, because I didn't get that from my parents. And I'm not angry at my parents. I'm not disappointed by my parents. My parents are incredible. But I think it's a generational thing. It was out of fear. It was out of the way that they grew up. And my dad came from nothing and had nothing, and he worked his butt off to get everything for us. But I don't think that he, or maybe they, looked at me and thought, well, this is what he's really good at. So I guess my advice to my younger self would be, you either figure it out or you don't. But even if you don't, you have to work towards it. And you have to, I think, talk to the people around you who care about you to get them to understand why it is that you want to do what it is that you're doing, and to get that support. Because I think the only time that my dad really understood what it was that I was doing was when I sent him a video of all of my DHL work in Times Square on the electronic billboards. And then he was like, ah, okay, now I get it. So I understood it, but I didn't go there. I was too worried about what everyone else thought. And I think maybe that's one of the reasons why at this stage in my life, also professionally, I'm much more risky with the mindset of, well, what will they think if I do this? What will they think if I say this? What will they think if I rock the boat? Rock the boat. I think that's okay. As long as you're respectful about it, rock the fucking boat. So I don't know. I think just being in tune with what it is that you're good at and what it is that you want to do, and you within yourself, and to not shy away from it. Because it's scary to do something when other people are saying, no, you should study economics. What about math? What about all of these subjects that you should be learning? I'm like, but why? I'm a writer. I want to write. I want to create those things. So.
And you said, I'm a creative, I'm a writer. So what do you love to write? And do you find that you start the creative process from the words, from the text, or do you have images? I would love to hear your process a little bit.
Well, it depends. It really depends on what it is we're talking about, because if it's a client, then it starts with thinking. It's before you get to the storytelling component and the how it is you express what it is that they are, you have to come up with the what. And that's determined by strategy. So I love being involved in strategy. I'm 95% of the time I'm in all the strategy calls, which is not typical of creatives. But I love that thinking. And that thinking, when it's just pure brand strategy, then it's answered with creative afterwards. I mean, that's quite standard. But I like it when I'm there and I'm hearing it from the horse's mouth, all the interviews, all the conversations, because that starts me thinking, that inspires me already. So sometimes that happens. Sometimes I'll just have an idea and I'll just write it down. Sometimes it's an image. I'm also, as a writer, I'm very visual in my approach. And there are lots of art directors that I've worked with, and the best art directors that I worked with were the ones who were really, really, really smart and who had the line as well. And then sometimes it's the image. And as a creative outside of branding, like, for example, I mentioned the advocacy work that I'm doing, many times it comes from a completely different place. And by the way, creativity is also with kids. It's also like when I play with my kids, it's not just a headline, it's also an idea. It's like, what are we going to do that's going to be fun for them? So I don't want to say I like to be creative. I mean, I am creative and we're all creative, all of us are, but it comes in different ways and there are different beginnings to how the process starts every time.
Okay, let's come around to the advocacy. I think that's probably the theme of the article that you wrote. There's so much going on right now, the buzz after the Academy Awards.
Sure. Well, what would you like to know about Glaser and his comments? By the way, he went to my school, I think. I went to JFS in London. It's a Jewish school. And I think he went there as well, from what I've understood. But did I see his film? No, I haven't seen his film, no. But I did hear his speech.
Yeah, I saw his film after I heard his speech, and it was kind of like a very polite reaction in the room, which was interesting too. Nobody like had outbursts. And then there was this huge reaction in the community, in the Jewish community in particular, to his comments. So I would like to hear if you have any comments about what you think he said in light of the timing and his comments.
All our choices were made to reflect and confront us in the present, not to say, look what they did then, rather look what we do now. Our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. It shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October the... Whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza, all are victims of this dehumanization. How do we resist? Alexandra Bistron Kaladziejczyk, the girl who glows in the film as she did in life, chose to. I dedicate this to her memory and her resistance. Thank you.
Based on what he said, look, the man's entitled to his opinion, but he was a bit of a jackass with what he said, because you make a Holocaust film and you end up talking not about the Holocaust victims of the time. You don't know clearly what's going on here on the ground to the Israelis and the Jewish people. And you speak up for those who, I'm not saying all of the Palestinians, but a lot of the Palestinians who are against us, who are fighting us, who support Hamas, and who want us gone. So it's kind of like you kind of expect that with the propaganda of the Palestinians and the Arab world and the Muslim world. You expect that from people from outside of your community. And we have that within our community too as well. People say, I'm opposed to genocide. Well, so am I. I'm opposed to colonialism. Well, so am I. I'm opposed to baby killing. Well, so am I, as a Jew and as an Israeli and as a human being. But when a Jewish person says that in the context of what we really know is true about this conflict, about who started the conflict, about why we're in this mess to begin with, which doesn't really have much to do with us and has everything to do with radical Islam, to have one of your own say the things that he said is a betrayal. I commend him for saying what he believes in and his truth, but that's where it ends for me. That's all the respect that he gets from me. Because A, I don't agree with him. I think he's wrong. I think that he's been brainwashed. I think that that is the most visible stage where you have an opportunity to say something, and to say or to allude to the fact that Israel is committing a genocide or some type of Holocaust, or enjoying the situation that we were kind of thrust into because of rabid terrorist sociopaths who killed over 1,000 people and kidnapped almost 250 people, many of whom are still there. For him to make those comments and not even address that is, in my view, disgusting. And that's how I feel. I think that you can say peace on earth. You can say coexistence. You can say, I don't want any innocents to get killed. I'm all for that because that's what I believe. But you also have to talk about what's really happening. And what's really happening is, as he's talking, 134 people have spent almost, I think, 160 days underground, who saw their families, their partners, their children, their grandparents executed, heads chopped off, burnt alive, raped, gang raped, kidnapped. And you don't mention it? You don't mention why we're in this mess to begin with? I think that that's the height of irresponsibility. And he lost a lot of respect from the majority of the Jewish community, and I think from a lot of people who really embrace Western values. And I think he did it because he feels guilty. Not guilty for what we're doing. I think he feels probably guilty for all that has been done by Western countries over the course of hundreds of years, if not thousands. And then you see on the surface what it looks like what we're doing, but we're really not doing that. And that requires really understanding the situation. So if you don't understand this situation, don't get up on a stage and talk about it and throw your people under the bus. Not because you're throwing your people under the bus, but because your people do not deserve to be thrown under the bus, because what you are saying is not true and irresponsible. And lives are at stake. Like, literally, lives are at stake. I'm shocked that more Jewish people have not been killed outside of Israel since this conflict began because of the anti-Semitism that he unintentionally fueled. That's my long-ass answer.
I like your suggestion that I play the speech. My knee-jerk reaction was just, it was an inappropriately timed speech. And then I've now been listening and reading and paying attention to all of the uproar to it. I just thought it was his intention, I think, not knowing him, based on the movie he made, was to say, let's have peace in the Middle East. But I agree with everything you said. It just, you have to give some kind of context. And also, it was just so badly timed after a movie that's talking about sort of just the desensitized nature of human beings against the annihilation of an entire population.
He leveraged the Holocaust in his speech and did not mention the Holocaust survivors. I mean, if you remember the speech that was given, the acceptance speech by Schindler's List, go look at that speech. That's an acceptance speech. And if you want to talk about the conflict, talk about the conflict, but talk about it responsibly and don't show just one side to an audience, a global audience that really doesn't know what's going on because of the propaganda that is being fueled by Iran and by Russia and by China, all of these things. The biggest shock is, how can you make a Holocaust film and not talk about the Holocaust? Really talk about the Holocaust, talk about the victims, as opposed to, well, what's happening today is similar to the Holocaust and that shouldn't happen. A, that's not true. B, talk about the fucking Holocaust. Talk about those people. How you can spend years making a film and not talk about the reason why you made it and not, you know what I mean? That baffles me. And I haven't seen the film. I've heard it's a very powerful film. And some other people have said it's rubbish, but until I see it, I have no idea. But no, sure.
Your impressions. It's a very numbing film, very heartache. I've read so many reviews. I like to read the reviews after I've seen it so that I get my own intrinsic response. So we'll do a part two. What was the purpose or drive of writing the article about the Eurovision competitor? I would love to hear about that.
It actually wasn't my idea. I was approached by the editor of Variety magazine, who I know, and she knows that I'm a writer. Her name is Shirley. And she saw that I'd been writing all sorts of things about Israel. And we just worked on it. I know, we just worked on it together. The Eurovision Song Contest was happening. A lot of people then and still now think that Israel is a white colonialist country, not understanding that we're one of the most diverse countries in the world. And yeah, we have black people here. And we have Muslims here that are active members of our society, whether they sit on the Supreme Court, whether they're pharmacists or doctors, whether they're working in hospitals and in marketing. People don't know that. And I think that was the inspiration for the article. And she represented Israel. There's such diversity here. And yeah, she's black. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is people don't know that. So that was the inspiration for the piece.
What other kinds of advocacy are you working on?
Well, around 10 years ago, I made a film called I'm That Jew, which went viral within the Jewish community, and it's been seen around 15 million times. And coming out of that recently, I decided to make a simple banner campaign, literally things that you would see on Instagram, on X, on Facebook, where I showcase Jewish individuals and I put them on a very colorful, optimistic, bright and bold kind of poster with a line. And the line is, that Jew, or what Jew? So I'm that dancer Jew, you know, that could be you, or I'm that love a gin and tonic Jew. So I've made hundreds of them. And the idea behind that campaign is, of course, to celebrate our pride to our community, but also it's to humanize us in a time where we are being actively dehumanized. Because when the Jewish people are being called apartheid, genocide lovers, we're being reduced to very negative stereotypes by people that really hate us. So this campaign I created to humanize us, and it's been seen around 8 million times in the last few weeks. And then there's a whole bunch of other stuff that I've been doing where I'll make films, recorded narratives, amateur documentaries. Sometimes it's literally just writing, just like headlines, and just expressing my Jewish perspective, my point of view, in a way to try and strengthen our community, to fight false narratives, and to kind of like express pride. As someone who's in branding, I know that if you think about companies, if the company doesn't speak, doesn't express, doesn't put their persona out there, then their competition will kind of like do it for them by A, speaking up about themselves, and by drowning out the potential voice that they do have. And that's what the enemies of the Jewish people have been doing so well for so many decades. And my agenda is to counter that. And that's what I've been doing for 15 years. So yeah, the work has been seen. I think the other day we sat down on the numbers and it's like anywhere between 60 to 70 million views in the last four or five months. And I'm just trying to serve the Jewish people right now in a time of need, because we need to speak. And if someone doesn't have the courage or the words to say what they want to say, I think that's where some of the work that I'm doing and others like myself, that's where our work comes into play.
And while you're supporting being Jewish and Jewish pride, which is beyond important, it's, I don't know what, there's no weight, there's no appropriate word. Do you all comment on the current government in Israel? Do you get involved with the political climate that are Netanyahu and...
I'm not a Netanyahu fan. I never have been. I mean, I think that he did amazing things for our country. And back in the day, like way back in the day. But there was always something also that I didn't like that he was doing. And over time, the stuff that I didn't like is 95%. I was one of those guys that went out to all the demonstrations in Israel. I don't know if your listeners are aware of the political situation in Israel before October the 7th and the situation that we're still in. But he has too much power. He has a very right-wing government. And I think that his time is up. And I felt that it was Bibi Netanyahu first and the people of Israel second. So that was before the war. That's what I felt. That's what I still feel. That said, right now we are at war. Do I like Netanyahu? No, I don't. I think we need new leadership. But yeah, I don't talk about that too much in my advocacy work. I don't go there. But I was talking about that before October the 7th. Jewish advocacy to me is speaking for the Jewish people, to strengthen the Jewish people, and also for Israel. And I might talk about it one day if I feel that it's more important. But right now, I'd prefer to talk about the hostages. I'd prefer to talk about the people who don't even know if their sons and daughters and mothers and fathers are alive. I'd rather talk about the injured soldiers and the soldiers that are still fighting for us. I'd rather talk about Hamas and Hezbollah and these radical Islamic thugs. I'd rather talk about the global perception of the Jews. Those are the things that I'd rather talk about.
Let's get back to you as a creative, which I think you made a very good point without speaking to it. What I got is that the best creatives are thinkers. The best creatives are people who have ideas and want to change the world. Best creatives reflect the world. And I think you're such a dynamic personality and such a good speaker. And you come across so human. I had this feeling, it was emanating from you. You're so easy to hear and you say things in a way that seem uncomplicated on such complicated issues. And I think that's really important. It's good to talk to somebody who has their heart in the right place, but also can communicate these ideas because it's so important. And because people have such a short attention span, you have to be able to communicate complicated ideas in a few seconds, right?
Well, first of all, thank you. That means a lot, what you said, and I really appreciate it. So thank you very much. It's very nice to hear. Thank you. Look, I don't think I'm the smartest guy. I don't think that I'm surrounded by very, very smart people in the world, and especially when it comes to conflict and there's analyses and knowing your history. And I try to speak from my heart. And I try to teach my kids the difference between right and wrong. And I don't think that it's that complicated. You don't do something to someone else that you would rather they wouldn't do to you. I mean, it really comes down to that. And to any pro-Palestinian supporters right now, they'd probably jump on that right now and say, yeah, but like you're creating a Holocaust. It's a genocide and you had that. And how can you do that to someone else? Well, I can say that because it's not a genocide, because it's not a Holocaust. And what I tell my children is learn, do the work, not pick up a book, do the work, talk to people. You need to find things out for yourself. Listen, recently Tiffany Haddish came to Israel, and Tiffany Haddish is a bit of a superstar, yeah? And we've been in touch and we met and we went out for dinner and she was lovely. And I'm not close friends with her at all. She was a lovely person, but we're not friends. When we were sitting down for dinner and also the things that she said publicly is I'm hearing all of this stuff about what's going on. I'm hearing all of this stuff about Israel, and I'm hearing it from the Israelis. I'm hearing it from Jewish people. I'm hearing it from Black Americans. I'm hearing it from Palestinian supporters. And I want to go and I need to find out for myself. That's doing the work. And there's nothing complicated about that. You know what I mean? It's just like, I could talk to you about some very complicated stuff right now and the situation, but the bottom line is you have to do the work. You can't just like take things that people say to you at face value and then not just immediately believe it, but also immediately share it as truth. And in doing so, create a situation where 100 other people now believe you, or another 100 million people believe you in the case of some of the Bella Hadids. So to me, humanity is about respecting the other. Respecting the other also means understanding them. And I think that too many people don't understand things. And when you don't understand things, I think that's when stuff gets complicated. To me, my philosophy on life is just like, be kind and be generous with your spirit and give people the benefit of the doubt. Now, if people come to you with hate, then that's a different scenario. If people come to you with intolerance for no good reason, then that's a different scenario. But if someone comes to you with intolerance and says, you're committing a genocide, we want to get rid of you, the gloves are off. I'm not a nice guy anymore. I'm not kind and I'm not generous, and you will feel the wrath of my words and we'll fight. I think it really comes down to, you talked about simplicity, it comes down to humanity. Humanity is a beautiful thing. And I think that we lose touch with it too often because of what you touched on, which is like, there's so much stuff online, there's so much noise, there's so many people trying to get attention, there's so many people trying to just like be famous. I don't care about this stuff that I'm doing. I don't care about the advocacy. I'm a father of two amazing kids, and I want to be on the floor with them playing Lego and wrestling with them and having fun, and with my wife. I think are a lot of people that do want that. There are a lot of people out there that are getting famous for just having a platform, and what is on their platform is not the truth. The truth is very simple. The situation is complicated, but if you dig deep enough, the truth is going to be this: coexistence or no coexistence, lying or telling things as they are, helping people or attacking people. To me, it boils down to that. And I embrace all who are in touch with their humanity, not those who are in touch with their perceived humanity, but people who are in touch with their real humanity based on what things truly are, not this upside down world where you don't know what to believe anymore. I don't know. I don't know if that answers your question, but it's quite simple to me at the end of the day. It just is. If you don't teach your kids to hate, they won't hate. They just won't. It starts at home. And Israelis, some Israelis and some, we have extremists within our society. It's not the majority, but some are raised to hate. And I don't think that's good. So I say so. It's that simple. And I think that I wish that more people did that as opposed to just taking everything at face value. You got to do the work. I mean, I'm on social media, but I'm very much against social media. I really am. I mean, I think it's, I hope one day someone just switches it off, pulls the lever, and it's gone. Until that happens, we have to fight the good fight, but I don't think we're going in a good direction.
It's interesting because Israel is known for being so mobilized and ahead in tech. And, you know, Israel in terms of digital has always been ahead, right?
Well, in terms of digital, but not in terms of narrative. Israelis suck at narrative. There's a reason why the Israel brand is in the toilet. It's because Israelis are not good at communicating. And by the way, working in Israel as a brand builder, I can tell you that when I'm working with chief marketing officers here in this country, we've got a long way to go. So yes, we're good with tech, but no, we're not good with narrative. No, we haven't invested in narrative. No, we don't have enough people who have been, look at Alon Levy, who's, you know, he's a mate of mine now because of all the stuff that we've been doing together. He's been suspended right now. He's the only man on the job that's actually making a difference with our narrative. You'd expect a country to have tens of these people, but we don't, and we never have. So we're way ahead in certain things, and we are way behind in other things. And my hope is, and I don't know how optimistic I am about this, but my hope is that because of the walloping that we got, not only on October 7th physically, but in the aftermath of October 7th with this propaganda war that we're up against, that Jewish leadership and Israel leadership will invest in narrative, will invest in authentic storytelling, will invest billions in people like me and other people who know how to express truth and know who the audience is. Because, okay, well, we have to talk to Christians that know nothing about Israel. We have to talk to liberal, democratic Jews. We have to talk to Republican Jews. We have to talk to the Black American community. We also have to talk to Europeans. These are all different audiences that need to hear the same story told in a different way. That's a huge investment of time and money, and it's branding 101. And we really are behind the curve. We're completely outnumbered, and it's a tricky situation. I hate to be so dismal, but remember what I told you about like speaking truth? I think that's truth. I think that the only potential silver lining here in the context of October 7th and the narrative is like maybe now people will understand that we need to invest in it. But I don't think they do yet. I don't think they do.
Can I have you close out with one thought? If you could maybe bring it all in, all of the commentary about advocacy, about creative, what do you feel is your driving passion and how does it become your power?
I think that I need to make things. There are those creatives that they create and then they put it, they leave it in their notebook and that's it. Or that's not me. I need to come up with the idea or spot an idea, write it, design it with my team, produce it, make it, put it out there. And I get depressed when I'm not doing that. It's not me to not create. And so I think my purpose is to create and to make. And I try through my work to be human and to be empathetic. I don't try. I mean, I think that's, I mean, we're all human, but I guess what I mean is like that humanity thing and to be empathetic and to try and make the world better, just because why would I want to make it worse? Do you know what I mean? Like I want everyone to be happy. So through what it is that I do for a living and who it is that I am innately, I feel the need always to make, create, put it out there for people to see, inspire, challenge, rock the boat a little bit, but all with the intention of making things better.
Thank you, Mark David, as always, for your wonderful Voice of God announcer segment. I appreciate you and your talent. Thank you, Jason Usry, for making every edit pristine with your touch and your talent. Thank you, Gabe Baker, for this magnificent opening of Hatikva. I appreciate your inspirational contribution.
If you see some of the angry things that I've written about and some of the angry pieces that I've produced, you might think, don't know about that. But if you actually think about what I'm angry about and what I'm challenging people on, it's like you're fucking up the world. That's bad. It's coming from that place. If you have an opportunity to, with your talent, whether it's engineering or art or dancing or writing or whatever it is, to make things better, I believe that that's what I've always tried to do. And that's certainly what I'm trying to teach my children. I think I always tell them to be kind and generous. And I mentioned that before, but to be kind means to see the other person, to really see them. And to be generous means to be generous with your spirit, to give of your spirit, not at your expense. You can help someone and then you're being generous with your spirit. You can listen to someone and you're being generous with your spirit. You know, that's what I mean by being generous.
So thanks very much for listening to this episode, and please share all the episodes with your friends and colleagues. We appreciate your ratings and comments on Apple Podcasts and on social media. If you'd like more information about our programs and our special people and projects, please access www.morezap.com, More Zap Productions for Talent and Literary. And if you'd like to book a special one-on-one coaching or a group clinic or workshop, please access passion-power.com, and you can fill out our form there and make a request. Thanks again.